45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me this week is Lockie. Lockie, how are you, mate?
Top notch. Hello to everyone. It's been a little while. We've been busy. There's stuff we've learnt, Mitch, that's outside of rugby and often outside our control. It's a horrible realisation, mate.
It's a difficult one to come to terms with, that life isn't just rugby. And as much as we want to be able to be consistent and regular every single week, things happen. Life happens. Bundle that up with the fact that the Reds lost a very winnable game against the Western Force, and we all of a sudden can't find time to sit down and record a podcast. That's right, Lucky.
No, very busy man. Lots of leather-bound books, rich mahogany, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But we're here now. We will dissect the rotting carcass that was the Reds' performance in Perth, and a few other bits and pieces, but plenty to chew through, especially a bit of a Super Rugby Women's review preview for round two and round three, Mitch. Heaps going on in that space.
Very much looking forward to chatting that. Some really, really exciting games over the weekend and some more really key matchups coming up this weekend. So before we dive into that, just as we touched on in the intro, we have not followed our regular kind of broadcast schedule these past few weeks. We do apologize. We have things going on outside of the podcast. We might be able to shine a little bit more light into that next week. There are a few things that are going on behind the scenes that are sort of getting sorted out at the moment. We hopefully will be able to update you next week and then, maybe rejig the schedule a little bit or just reset expectations moving forward, but a little bit more information to come there. We are all still alive and kicking. There has been some people on social media that have been getting in touch and saying, are you guys still all right? Yep, we're definitely all right. So thanks for sharing
the love.
Together.
We do
appreciate it. So before we get into the rugby action this weekend, we have had our Super Rugby tipping comp running for the whole season. So well done to Wilson's Warriors or Nick W, who's still in top spot on 26 points. We have Owen Carroll in second spot on 25 points. So very, very tight there, 1 point between them. And in third place, we've got Lucas H or his team Thepro on 25 points. So very, very tight up the top there. I was last week, I think 145, and I made a big song and dance about getting into the double digits. I've unfortunately gone down to 175th this week. So not going the way I was hoping, not getting closer to the top of the comp and anything getting closer to the end of the comp, unfortunately. Lockie, did you manage to get your tips in this week?
I did. Again, let down by my gorgeous Reds. More to come in that space. But we've cracked the top 20, which is exciting. So I'm sitting pretty on 2-0. Top 10, I'm coming for you.
Well done. At least one of us is actually walking the talk. So it's not just all talk like on my end. But enough of that. Let's get into the Super W wrap-up for round two. Now, this was a belting weekend of rugby. Some really, really, really close games and some surprisingly not close games as well. So the first game we'll start on is the Brumbies hosting the Rebels on Friday afternoon. Now, this was the first time that the closest I think the Rebels have come to their first victory in Super W. Final score was 24-22. Brumbies finding a way to get out of jail in that game. Very exciting game overall, and I guess heartbreak for the Rebels women's team.
It was a heartbreaking finish in particular. They found themselves, 2 points down. They win the penalty about probably, I'd say, 25 metres out from the try line, but a bit of a tough angle next to the left touchline. So rather than have a crack at three, they decided to hit the line out, go for the maul. The maul goes down. They get a quick use it call from referee and bang, like that, their chance goes. It's a scrum turnover. And Brumbies clear it, 24-22 winners. So agony for the Rebels girls in pink there. But there were heroes and villains on both sides. I thought seeing former Seven star Samantha Traherne back in Rebels colours was really, really cool. She had a huge impact for the Crystal Maze try late in the piece. And Jamie Nuku at hooker for the Rebels continues to impress, bagged a couple of tries. But from the Brumbies, their Wallaroos keep standing up, Mitch.
Just absolutely going from strength to strength, this Brumbies team. This season, as you touched on, that sort of the last call there by the referee to use it or lose it, I thought was heartbreaking for those Rebels women. I've watched that replay a few times, gone back, and I can count in my head about 2 seconds from when she calls use it to when she calls advantage to the Brumbies. Now, whether there's something that's not as easily seen from the sidelines or the coverage of a player maybe lying over the ball or the ball was not usable, not 100% sure. They're not saying the referee called the wrong thing, but geez, it was is a tough call in that, you know, your advantage, you're moving forward, you're in the opposition 22, you're 2 points behind. You'd love to see this Rebels team get their first ever victory in Super W, and yet it ends like that. So heartbreak for them, but the Brumbies, again, like they have in previous years, have just shown up. And even though the Rebels women did score first and were able to sort of extend the lead at times, the Brumbies never went away from the fight and continued to ask questions of the women in pink and ultimately got the victory at the end.
They did. Look, and we mentioned the Stars before, but Faitala Meleka hits a really nice line to score their first try. Tanya Naden gets two. She was brilliant at the back of the rolling maul and in tight. And the big one for me is skipper Pesipalu. Just when they needed a lift in the second half, she rolls over the top of a couple of defenders from close range and gets that critical score to put the Brumbies back ahead during the second half. So it was all the test stars that you expect to stand up in these games, and they were the ones that delivered for the Brumbies.
The real talking point I thought came from for mine, or the thought process, was watching this game and all the talk that's going on about the Melbourne Rebels in the men's side and the financials and are they going to exist in 2025. The real question I have is what's going to happen to the women's program? Like, we've got some really great talent down there playing for the women's team. And you would imagine that if the Rebels men's team folds, then the women's team follow that path. Whether they can stay in some format, it's going to be pretty difficult. And it would just be a real shame for Australian rugby to lose the likes of this Rebels team with the players that they have playing in that 23.
Yeah, there's gun talent all through the board in Victoria. So, you know, plenty of watch that space. I think over the next few months, we're hoping that we can keep all these players involved in rugby because they have contributed so much. So I think of players like Mel Kawa, who's still trucking around in Victoria, scoring tries, became a mum over the off-season as well. It's great to see those storylines come out of Vic. So plenty of positives from that for both the Brumbies and the Rebels. And then when you look to the next game, Fiji and Drew and New South Wales Waratahs, you have a whole stack of positives to chew through in Sky Blue.
We were talking in our preview of this game last week that this could go either way, and that the Fijian and Drua, though not getting the chocolates in the regular season last year, did manage to kick the Waratahs women out of in the semifinals and go on to win the comp. We were expecting that this game was the first time these two teams had met in Fiji, that the ledger would be in the Fijians' favour, but that is not what happened in this game. 62-21, an absolute demolition job there by the women in white for this game. Absolutely clinical in every facet of the game. The Drua came back at times and they were willing to throw that ball around, but the Waratahs women always had an answer, always had a reply to anything that the Fijians were throwing up.
You're right. I think the fight back that you mentioned as well that we usually see from the Drua, it was negated by how clinical the Waratahs were. So they're up 19-0 after about 15 minutes. You had amazing long-range try from Maya Stewart, a really nice assist from Piper Duck for Caitlin Laney's try, and then Desiree Miller beats three people to feed Stewart over the line. So they're up in a flash. But the Drua hit back, 19-14 after half an hour, and the Tars just kicked on. So twice they shook them from 19-14, and then I think it was 31-21. The Tars just kept kicking on. There was none of that Drua blowout that you usually see, especially on home soil. And to finish up 62-21, that is a massive shift from the Tars. They've got to be premiership favourites after that, Mitch.
You've got to, I mean, I don't see any team coming close to the performance or the form that the Waratahs were in on Saturday afternoon. Not to say that any team can't beat them in the competition, but if the Waratahs continue to play that style and that well in terms of like cohesion and moving the ball around the park, they're going to be a very, very hard team to handle. The conditions, I thought, lent themselves a lot more to the Fijians' sort of tempo and style of rugby. And we saw that in the men's game earlier in the day. But the Waratahs women just looked fit. And I think that's what it really did come down to at the end there, the ability to move the ball to space, to have the legs and the gas to go the full length of the field and score some of those full length tries. Just an absolutely clinical performance by them. And I mean, if they don't win Super W in 2024, you'd be pretty shocked at this point in the competition. You'd come back and say, geez, this was an absolute clinical masterclass. How did they not win it? So very much a lot of, I guess, expectation riding on their shoulders now. Let's see if they can back it up against the Melbourne Rebels this week, which we'll get to in our preview a little bit later in the podcast. Let's move on to the third game of the round, and that was at HBF Park, the Western Force women getting the Chockies over the Queensland Reds women 24-14 there. Now, the score was 24-14, 10-point margin, but it probably favours the Queensland Reds a little bit. I thought the Western Force were a lot more dominant than the scoreline suggests.
Yeah, the Force look really structured this year. We mentioned that their set piece had improved in the last pod, but even their attack shape is really, really clinical. They've always got a wide-running pod of forwards ready to go. They're efficient at their clean out on the attacking side. And I thought they were the better team for most of this game. You saw the Reds get off to a really good start. There was an error straight from the kickoff that led to them going 7-0 up from a rolling maul try after about 3 minutes. But there was really patient build-up from the Force through that first half. So Natsuki Kashiwagi goes over for a really nice try. The Japanese Tokyo import. And then another rolling maul try. I think it was Sarah Klein, the Canadian hooker, who went over. And they rolled 20 metres. It was a huge rolling maul try. It was like an old school sort of springbok.
Just never see that, right? 20 metres. Incredible.
They did so well. And they kept forcing tight heads through the game. They scored another rolling maul try in the second half. So they were really, really running this game up at, I think they were 19-7. And it took a really sort of solo moment from Ivania Wong to cut through the line and feed Caitlin Irwin to make it seem as though the Reds had more of a say. But for me, it was Force all day.
It was a really clinical performance by them. And playing at home, I think, is a big factor in the performances of both the men's and women's team. We'll talk about that a little bit later when we talk about the Super Rugby Pacific game that was played there at HBF Park later that afternoon. But yeah, let's move across now, I guess, into our previews for Super Rugby Women's while we're on it. We've got it all together. So this weekend we have, on Friday night, the Waratahs women are hosting the Melbourne Rebels. Now that's a 5:05 p.m. kickoff. It's Good Friday, so it's a public holiday. If you don't have plans yet, make sure you're there supporting the women, particularly after that incredible performance last week against the Fijiana in Drua. Lockie, how do you see this one going? Do you think that the women from Perth, the girls in pink, as we have been calling them, can upset this Sky, the sky's the limit Waratahs team at the moment?
We need to work on our Super Rugby Women's logos here. But I think it's going to be one-way traffic, unfortunately, for the Rebels. They've looked brave in their first two performances, but this Tars unit is so clinical. And I mean, think of the outs that they've already got at the moment. You know, M Chancellor ruled out for the season with an ACL is one of the bigger outs that you can expect in world rugby. They lost Laurie Kramer back to the Reds after her Exeter stint. And so that's two of the most seasoned Wallaroos, and they are flying. It's like they didn't even need them, with the utmost respect to those two players. They look even stronger this year. So it's going to be a sky blue wave, I think, for that one. I'd be tipping Tars 20 plus.
Yeah, it's going to be a big game, I think. I'd love to see the Melbourne Rebels get their first victory. I think the Waratahs are going to be too strong, and they do need to continue that form in Super W. It is such a short competition. The travel element, I think, is going to be an interesting element. Coming back from Fiji, traveling there and coming back, whether they aren't as, I guess, primed as maybe the Rebels women, who don't have as much travel to factor in their preparation. But again, we will see come Friday night. So the second game of the round is another Fijian game. This is being played at Churchill Park. Fijiana in Drua hosting the Western Force. So 2 weeks in a row that in Drua have been able to play at home, which is awesome for them to be able to play in front of their home crowd. Do you think the Western Force can come and capitalize on maybe the opportunities that the Waratahs have shown against this Fijiana side and get the win?
I think they could. I really think they could. It's an interesting thing to consider that the Force might be beating Fiji on home soil. We wouldn't even dreamt of it last year, but I love what we're seeing from the Force pack. It looks so strong. Players like Klein, Kashigawa that we mentioned, but also Pia Tapsell coming across from New Zealand have given it a lot of starch. So they support the Leonards and the veterans of that side. I think it's going to be really tight contrasting styles with the free-running Fijians against a almost 10-woman footy style that the Force like to introduce before flinging it out wide. Flip a coin. You know what? Let's get behind them. Force by two. Let's say force by two in Fijian soil. It's a huge call. Are you going to come with me on it?
I love the optimism. I really would love to see the women from Western Australia get the win against Fijiana. I think, as you highlighted, the real clash of styles, I think, is these two teams. The Fijiana love to throw the ball around, love open play, love counter-attacking, whereas the Western Force women have shown this season that they really rely on their set piece, slow the ball down, go to their more, go to their set piece, and really use that to their advantage. So I think if the Western Force can keep the pill in hand and starve the Fijian and Drua of that ball, there's no reason they can't win this game. But if they do allow the Indrua to throw the ball around and to be that Fijian flair that we've come to expect from them, then I think they may struggle out wide, particularly to bring down some of the bigger wingers. Again, it is a flip of the coin. I'm going to go with the Western Force and hope that they can keep their hands on the pill, like you said. But I think we're probably the minority there, because the Indrua at home 2 weeks in a row, massive, massive battle there. But yeah, really, really exciting to see how this one does play out. Now, the third game of the round is played at Suncorp Stadium, 5:05 p.m. It's the prelude to the men's fixture, which is of the same lineup, which is really cool to see. I guess the Waratahs women is the same. Actually, I think this game, this whole round is the double headers, but it's the same afterwards as well, which is awesome to see. Like, the men and the women are both playing both same teams, which is really, really cool. Hasn't happened so far yet this year. But the third game of the weekend is the Queensland Reds women hosting the ACT Brumbies women. Lockie, do your girls from Queensland have enough to hold off this Brumbies pack?
Well, it's do or die for Queensland, right? The grand finalists from last year managed to get through after beating Drew in the regular season and then Brums in the semi. And now they're in a position where if they drop this game, they're not making the semifinals. We're going to have a really tough road back because they haven't played the Tars yet as well. That's coming up, which is arguably the toughest fixture. And then you've also got the Rebels. So with the way that the Rebels are improving, you can't bank on that game either. So they're rooted right at the bottom, no points yet. If they drop a game to the Brumbies, it's sayonara to finals, which would be a huge blow from where we came in 2023. So I'm expecting a big, big contest here. Again, at Suncorp, the Reds got up over the Brumbies when they played them last year. So there's a bit in their favour. And I think it's about time the Reds get up. I think they've got the cattle to do so. And I think it's going to be Reds by 12.
A big score there. Not even just a tight one. You're going 12, two scores nearly for the Reds.
Let the shackles out. Let the shackles out, Reds.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Reds win this one as well. I think this is a game that they can win. Not that I haven't been impressed with the Brumbies so far this season, but I don't think they've shown as complete a performance as the two teams at the top of the ladder, the Waratahs or the Western Force. Now, the Rebels came very, very close last week, and as we said in our wrap-up, that if it was just for one maybe scrum advantage, maul advantage call, they potentially go on to win that game. So we're looking at a completely different sort of lineup on the ladder at the moment if the Rebels did get that win. So there's nothing to say that the Reds can't get the win over the Brumbies. It's going to be a big ask for the Brumbies to come to Suncorp. And if we can get a good crowd there to support them, or get the crowd there early, because we know everyone's going to show up and support this Reds team, particularly against the rivals, the Brumbies. I really would love to see the Reds do it. So I don't think that it's not achievable. I don't know if I'd go two scores like you with 12 points. I think it might be between like 2 or 3 points in the Reds' favour. I'm going to call it now. Laurie Kramer shoots a penalty on full time to win it for the Queensland Reds.
Oh, that's too much for me. That's too stressful. I don't think I'd handle that.
All right, let's just finish off on the Super W by wrapping up where the table currently sits. So in first place, we have the Waratahs women currently on 10 points, two wins, two bonus points as well. So two bonus point wins to them, which is great to see. The Western Force currently in second place. They've also got two wins, but only one bonus point. So they're on 9 points. Fijiana Indrua women in third place. One win, one bonus point on 5 points. ACT Brumbies on one win, one loss, zero bonus points, 4 points. Melbourne Rebels women on 5th place with 1 point. And the Queensland Reds down the bottom, very opposite to the men so far this season. No bonus points, no points on the table just yet.
Only a matter of time. Only a matter of time for Queensland. So we'll see a huge round coming up, and it will really make or break a lot of seasons. So please get out. Make sure you support. If you're in Sydney, if you're in Brisbane, get down to Allianz, get down to Suncorp, because you've got a double header, and support our Super Rugby women.
Now, if you are in Sydney based, I can't say at the moment what the Queensland Reds are doing. Maybe you can chime in after this, Lockie, but the Waratahs have 2-for-1 tickets available at the moment. So if you are interested, I think you can get general admission and gold class tickets for 2-for-1. I saw it advertised on their socials today. So I think you just need to go in and type in 2-for-1 in the promo section for the Waratahs. That's a great incentive to get some of your mates along who maybe aren't as keen rugby fans as yourselves. But make sure you take full advantage of the code. And I no doubt the Queensland Reds have something similar in place for you to get there and get as many people to Suncorp for the doubleheader this weekend.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a $60 deal for 2 adults and 2 kids. So good family atmosphere out there.
It's crazy value. That's so good.
It's such good value. So get down to Suncorp, one of the great stadiums. And I reckon, given the results of the Brumbies and the Reds men as well, we can see a crowd of in excess of 20,000 coming for Suncorp. So get on down. Don't miss out on 2 great games of footy. And Mitch, let's jump in. I'm excited to talk round 5 and round 6 Super Rugby because it's heating up.
All right, Super Rugby Pacific now. We're focusing on the men's side of things. Now, this is the podcast is later in the week, so we won't necessarily do a full wrap-up of the whole round of rugby. But I've got 3 talking points that I want to touch on for this last round. And before we talk about some of the actual games in a little bit more detail, but that first talking point is Taniela Tupou. Now, we're getting very, very close currently to halfway through this season for Super Rugby Pacific. We know in the off-season, Taniela Tupou did move from Queensland down to Melbourne. He's shifted clubs. We were hoping that that would have been the sort of change that he needed to rejuvenate himself. Yes, he's had some off-field injuries, but he's had the rehab time now to come back and be ready and really make his mark on Super Rugby Pacific 2024. But we haven't seen it. There's massive questions around his fitness. There's massive questions around his, I guess, mental processes at the moment. What's going on for Taniela Tupou and why is he not firing in Melbourne?
That's a damn good question, Mitch. And I think it's going to take people who are a bit close to the action for an answer, an honest answer at that. I think with Taniela in Melbourne, we've seen the best and the worst of him already. We've seen some performances where he hasn't quite clicked. And then on the flip side, we've seen games where over in Hamilton against Moana, he came on and he changed the course of that game with 3 tight heads in the second half. So the ability and the potential is still there. He can still be one of the world's best tight heads on his day, but it's about how many days will he actually be on, right? We haven't seen it consistently through the season. And you do have a stack of really good props down in Melbourne putting pressure on him. There's Sam Talakai's down there, Bonne Farmacilli's down there. You know, they're both test tight heads.
Kapusilo.
So, yeah, big caboose, Matt Gibbon on the loose head side. Like, there are stacks of talent down there. So we want to see the best of him. I don't think there's a person in Australian rugby that doesn't want to see Taniela Tupou firing on all cylinders, because when he's on, he is one of Australia's most marketable and most exciting assets on the rugby field. So, I mean, do you have any ideas? What do you think can be done to try and spark that, Mitch?
I just don't think, and I mean, we don't have any extra insight than anyone else in the like the rugby community at the moment around what is happening for Tupou. He just doesn't seem fit for mine. Like, he doesn't seem like he's playing at 100% capacity. We know that under Brad Thorn that he played big minutes for the Queensland Reds, and that that was something that he wasn't happy about, that he didn't want to have to play 80 minutes week in, week out and be that kind of turning point for them. Yes, it won them a Super Rugby AU title, but he wasn't happy with it. And we're ultimately, I think, seeing in international arena the effects of that. His body is breaking down. He's having these repetitive injuries, consistently spending time on the sidelines. So he's come to Melbourne. That was sort of the agreement when he came, that he didn't have to play big minutes. We're seeing him come off the bench. But even in the past few weeks when he has not started for them and has come off the bench, I don't think he's had the impact that we were expecting. That game last week against the Queensland Reds, he started, but he only played about 25 minutes before he went off injured, and he looked pretty cooked at that point too. So I don't know if there is something else going on behind the scenes potentially that's keeping him from either training fully or getting to full match fitness. but he just doesn't seem like that player that he was when he first sort of burst onto the scene and everyone was excited about. Yes, he can turn scrums. Yes, he can win us a penalty in a dying moments of a game. But at the same time, we've seen how the game has shifted away from the focus on just a player who can win you a scrum at a penalty at a scrum, to having impact players who can also carry the ball out wide and win you a turnover or score a try in the 78th minute when you've just progressively made your way up the field. And at the moment, Taniela Tupou isn't being that player for Australian rugby. So whatever what the cause is, I'm not 100% sure. There's reports coming out in the media that he's in talks with international clubs. I think Leicester has tabled some money for him. Could him going overseas be sort of the answer that we need? Does it sort of refresh him to kind of get away from the Australian Super Rugby setup and then just sort of be away but still be able to come back and play Wallabies? I'm not 100% sure on that. I just don't know if he's in as good a mental place either as he could be, and that might be sort of eating into the performances that he's had down at the Rebels.
Look, it could be, and there's now a precedent set for players going overseas. Personally, I want to see all our Wallaby players playing in Australia. I think it makes a stronger super comp. It keeps people engaged and keeps people connected, fans to players. But, you know, there are plenty of Aussies plying their trade overseas at the moment. I think of players like in the front row, like Scott Seo over at Exeter, who's doing a great job over there with the Chiefs, and they're on a pretty good tear at the moment in the Premiership. So there's a precedent for forwards going over and improving their games and, you know, learning different skills in the Northern Hemisphere. Maybe that's something that happens, but, you know, until we hear it from a team or from Nella himself officially, we're going to be on the outer.
Exactly. Now let's keep moving. So my second point, or the talking point of the round, was the Queensland Reds against the Western Force. Now, 31-40 to the Western Force in this one. Probably, I mean, is it an upset? I think coming into it, yes, it is an upset. But when you watch the game, like, the Force played very, very well and the Reds didn't. Was this is something we've spoken about in the podcast in previous weeks, that how well the Reds have been playing, is there a chance that they'll slip up? Is it? It's hard to stay at that peak sort of optimum level for consistently throughout a competition as tight and as abrasive as Super Rugby. I think we saw this week that the Reds just weren't 100% on, and the Force were, and they got the chockies here. Lockie, you are a Queensland Reds fan. How do you take that loss and how do you break it down?
We need to rewind that tape and go back to the last episode where we both said huge banana skin game, right?
Yeah.
You got the Force at home, they're 0-4. You know, everything's ripe for an upset. Even Les Kiss in his pre-game presser before going in during the week at Ballymore, we said this is a banana skin, we want to make sure it's not. Well, we knew, we could see it happening before our eyes as Reds fans, and it went exactly to script. You know, the Force shootout to a 28-5 lead, and that's too far a bridge for any team to climb at the end of the day, because Super Rugby is a good competition, right? Like, we're seeing teams play really well from 1 to 12, which is just about where it was with the Force. I think Reds were 3 and Force were 12, and they go out there and smack them. So great for the comp, but for the Reds, a sadly predictable story. You're right, I don't think they were as switched on. Fraser McWright this week in the presser mentioned that potentially the Reds needed to work on their preparation for away trips and having a better process and a structure to be ready for these kind of games, because they do have away trips to Fiji, to Christchurch, I think over Sydney, to the North Island, New Zealand, to Sydney again. We'll bank that one, though. That's fine. So they don't need to fix this up, because, you know, they can find themselves sliding down the table very rapidly if they're not careful. But Mitch, I'm conscious that, you know, raising, you know, the Reds being switched off, not performing well, takes away from the Force.
Exactly. Because
Simon Cron's side did really, really well. Like, look across the park. You know, Ben Donaldson outplayed Tom Liner. Nick White outplayed Tate McDermott, even though McDermott picked up 2 tries. And the biggest one, Carlo McDermott. But Carlo Tozzano in the 7 jersey.
Yeah.
Carlo Tozzano shaded Fraser McWright, I thought. I thought that little nugget over there put in a brilliant performance. He had 3 tackle breaks, a line break. He made 18 tackles, a couple of turnovers. Carlo was everywhere. And I think he typified that Force performance over in Perth.
I think what we've seen with the Western Force so far this season, that they've been right on the edge in a lot of games. And by the edge, I kind of mean the interpretations of the referee. So Carlo Tozzano, for one, has been a player very much like Fraser McWright this season, who goes hard at the ball and has been over the ball. But in a lot of games, for whatever reason, whether it's because the scoreline's against them, maybe the team around him isn't performing as cohesively and so they're not presenting pitches to the referee as efficiently, he hasn't been given the rewards. So he gets sort of called off the ball or he gets pinged for holding on at the ruck and he's not sort of rewarded for that presence on the ball. This week, with the players around him putting in a dominant performance, he was rewarded consistently over the ball and it made him look a lot better over Fraser McWright. And not to say that Fraser McWright, not to say that he didn't play better than Fraser, he definitely did. And you could tell it in the post-match afterwards when they interviewed him and he was talking about how, you know, when he was younger, he'd go to state championships and none of the players wanted to swap his jersey because he's from the West and they don't value West Australia and that kind of chip on his shoulder. And I think I kind of get the sense that Simon Cron really lent into that this week and sort of spoke to that because the boys were fired up and wanted to put in a performance against the Reds. And they definitely did that. I forgot what I was kind of saying, but yeah, I think just the way that they were building into this game and around them, they got that momentum through the referee, through Tozzano's on-ball presence, and that allowed their game to flow a lot more. Whereas in previous weeks, I think they've kind of been stifled there and have been kind of pulled back and not allowed to build that ascendancy against their oppositions.
And you got to take your opportunities, right? So we saw two errors from Harry Wilson that were really telling. One of them, both from restarts, he dropped it cold, and one of them went straight into the arms of Bailey Kunzel and he scored immediately after the Reds had spent 5 minutes working their way upfield. So you know, those things are massive, and say what you like about, the Reds were off, but if you don't take those errors, you're a bad you're a bad team. Force aren't a bad team. So they were able to do that. They did it for, I think there was a lot riding on it for Simon Cron as well. Yes, he signed his extension, so his job's secure, but that was a really strong team performance. And you're right, I reckon there's a bit of fire in the belly there. And to have a doubleheader against Queensland and have both force teams getting up, what a day out in Perth. I reckon that would have been a terrific atmosphere.
One of the questions that I have that's come out of this game is around game management. And so far this season, I think the Queensland Reds have managed games very, very well. And you can tell that there is a different approach to what Les Kiss is bringing that maybe Brad Thorne or previous coaches have brought to the game. But for mine, it was pretty telling in maybe the 77th minute that the Reds are down, final score 31-40. There's 9 points to go. They have a penalty and they've got the scrum feed on halfway. I think it was from a kick that didn't go or went out on the full. But they let that scrum take 2.5 minutes to set. It was reset. There was no urgency from the Reds players to kind of get that ball in, get it out. Let's have a play. They score a try there. They don't win the game, but they come away with a losing bonus point. And if they scored with enough time, yes, there's even potential to go to like extra time to potentially kick a penalty to win the game or a field goal if they can score quickly, but they just didn't have that urgency. They walked to the breakdown, so they walked to the scrum, they let it reset, they weren't sort of urgent. I think Fraser McWright might have been the only player that was really kind of antsy and was sort of trying to get the forwards ready and in, but there was no urgency there, and I thought that was really unusual. What was your read on that?
I always get frustrated by those dead minutes around scrum reset. I know it's important for the safety of the game and I'm not going to pretend like I have a referee's intuition or understanding of it, but seeing minutes tick away, whether you're up or down, must be infuriating for each game. Yes, I've got my maroon hat on for this one. You know, there's 2.5 minutes wasted where we could have gone upfield. But I think in any scenario, seeing minutes worth of scrum resets with the clock still ticking, you're taking away from that ball in play time. And that's something that I would love to see improved and driven over the course of this year's Super Rugby Pacific season. So, yeah, plenty to unpack from that one. But I think at the end of the day, Force put themselves in a position to win it and were good enough to complete.
So my next talking point for the round, or the last one before we talk about some of the other games that were played, was the Waratahs lost again. Now, 39-36 was the final score here against the Fijian Indrua. It went to overtime. The Waratahs had their opportunities. They took a field goal, or Edmed did take a shot at goal, but it was a shonky kick. It actually hit the post, below the crossbar and bounce back in field. At that point, the Drua then just worked their way down the field and once they had advantage, took that drop goal and won the game. Now, incredible performance by the Drua, incredible sort of, I guess, balls of steel in some ways to take that shot to get the win, which they've done before. This isn't the first time they've done that. Kemu Valentini, again, standing up and getting the win for the boys in blue. My question, the talking point, is around Tane Edmed. So the Waratahs themselves have now lost in the last three games by two and three is the kind of score looking back of what they've lost games. And they've been in it right to the death. And in multiple opportunities, it's been Tane Edmed that's stepped up to take a shot at goal, or his kicking hasn't allowed them to win games. Now, that must have a massive toll on his mental health moving forward. How do the Waratahs manage that? Are they managing that? And I guess my question is, what can they do moving forward? Do they have alternatives?
That's a great question. With developing fly halves in particular, around goal kicking, around the expectations of match management and sealing, closing those games, to have a young player that not 3 weeks ago people were calling a wallaby bolter off the back of one good game against the Crusaders. Let's not forget that. Like, the media was...
And let's also look back at that and realize now what the Crusaders are. And that probably takes a little bit of shine off that performance from the Waratahs, right? Like, they're easy beats this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, I'm sure that'll come back to bite us, but, yeah, there's been people blowing smoke up Tane Edmed, and none of this is his fault, but people have been blowing smoke up Tane Edmed saying, you know, he's a Wallabies bolt, he's all these things, it's terrific, rah, rah, rah. Yes, he's great. He's a good super rugby-level fly half, but all of a sudden, think about how that narrative's flipped in 3 weeks. Three errors at crucial points of the game, and the Tars are, what, 1-4 instead of potentially 4-1. Like, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy how quickly things turn around. And to even think about, you know, oh, well, he's under pressure now. Do we change him? Does he need to be supported? Does support look like dropping him to the reserve bench? I mean, imagine that. You've had 3 weeks where you've run the cutter and they go, oh, sorry, mate, we don't trust you to take that drop goal. You know, what that would do to a young player's confidence, that's a really tough thing to try and reconcile. So I don't have an answer for the Tars, unfortunately. I know that they've got, I think it's Will Harrison is almost back and ready to go.
He's back. He's named this week on the bench. And that was what I was going to bring up when we get to our previews a little bit later on around maybe that is a tactical issue there. But we haven't had that as an option for the Waratahs this season. Yep. That if Tane Edmed doesn't take the shots, who does? If Tane Edmed gets concussed 10 minutes into a game and goes off with a HIA and doesn't pass it, yes, we've got players that come on and we'll fill in at 10 or fill in centers and we can shuffle things around. But who actually takes a shot at goals? And if someone isn't good enough to do that in that instance, or is good enough to take a shot at goal in those instances when Tane Edmed's not available, why is that person not taking shots when the game's on the line? Because we've seen now consistently across, in terms of game management from the Waratahs, that the personal effect that this must be having on Tane, it must be instrumental, because the Waratahs team is playing well. And as a 10, he is playing well. And the only thing that he's not doing is getting those kicks. So let's just take that off his plate. Give that to someone else. Give that to a winger. Give that to a fullback who isn't the one that's leading the team and being the one that's leading the back line around. Give that to someone else who doesn't have that pressure on their shoulders. What I think will be beneficial this week, and hopefully I can come on the podcast next week and talk about if it does come down to the wire again, and touch wood it doesn't, I hope the Waratahs can put in dominant performance against the Rebels and get a bonus point win. But if it does come down to a few points right on full time and there's a shot at goal, Will Harrison needs to be the person that steps up, because Tane Edmed has scars now. How can you expect him now to stand up and consistently kick those goals when he's done the last 4 weeks he's missed in the same circumstance?
I think that's rough as. Like, it's been, three games, but also, what, how old's Tane Edmed? He'd be, what, 23? 22 or 23?
Yeah, 22 or 3,
Okay, so these are your formative years as a playmaker, right? You know, it's not sheep stations. This isn't a final. These are three opportunities where he's got up and he's missed a shot at the end. That sucks. But also, this is what you need as a player. Like, it goes to the whole, you know, Michael Jordan, how many shots did I miss kind of thing. without these opportunities, you can't see whether Edmed's up to scratch. I would be devastated if he, you know, pulls up stumps and goes overseas after a couple of years here and becomes another member of the lost fly half generation. Think yeah. of them. Think of the amount of tens that have gone overseas and pulled up stumps because it wasn't working for each other. Players like Isaac Lucas, was it Mac Mason?
Yeah.
From who was 5 years ago the next big thing, and then the Tars dumped him because they said he wasn't up to it. Like there are so many stories like this. I don't want Ed Meds to end that way. Mm. And I would like to see him backed. Yes, it's great that you have another kicking option in Harrison who's back and ready to go. But I think if I'm a Tars fan, I'm getting behind Tane Edmund and going, it's yours. Show us what you can do this year. You get to the end of the year, then we can reassess and see what's going on.
I'm not talking about dropping him completely. I'm just talking about coming in those last instances. If Will Harrison's on at fullback and there's a shot, a goal to win the game, maybe you give Harrison a shot. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you drop him. I think he's playing well enough to continue playing. And he's the type of player who is gutsy and will take the call himself, who will say, yep, I've got this. But I just wonder if when it comes to that crunch moment of on full time, there's a penalty, you're down by two, he's going to take the shot. You could already see this week from the coverage from Fiji that when they lost that game, there was a shot of Edmed and he was just sitting on the sideline like a seat away from any other Waratahs player, just staring blankly at the ground. And now that speaks volumes to me as a player is just lost in his own thoughts there. Like he's just playing over his head over and over again. I stuffed up that field goal. It's on me yet again. And I just don't think that we support our young players enough in this country to, I don't know, I just don't know if putting him consistently in that environment is actually doing him good or bad. I'm just not 100% sold on that.
Oh, I reckon we'll get stuck on this if we stay here, mate. But it is an interesting one, and I'm excited to see the division, whether Will Harrison does get a run in the cutter role at all against the Rebels coming up. But we'll quickly go through the games just gone that we didn't touch on before. I think from the Drua game, because we went through a whole game without talking about the fact that the Drua actually won that, we'll give a quick shout-out to a couple of those Drua players. Youssef Amasi, 3 tries. He was unbelievable in the first half. Frank Lamani, still a game-breaker at halfback. 2 50-22s that skittled the Tars at crucial moments either side of halftime. And hooker, Tevita Ikanavere, and in the row, Rotosolia, were both unbelievable up front. So a great game there, 39-36. Touching upon the games that we haven't had a quick chat about with your talking points, Mitch, Hurricanes 54 defeat the Rebels 28. Canes are up 33-7 at Oranges. The Rebels were just not much chop early on. I think there were 11 line breaks to none in the first half. That kind of summed up the way the Canes were able to cut them apart. But there were bright sparks in the second half. What did you make of Mason Gordon's debut?
Yeah, I don't know if this is... Look, I guess you probably can't go with what I was about to just say. I was going to say that maybe that's the solution to the Carter Gordon issue at the moment, that having his brother play fullback, they instinctively know each other and they can feed off each other. They'll get better the more they play together. But you've got Andrew Kellaway there that's starting in the fullback jersey. So I don't know if you want to drop Kellaway for Mason Gordon yet. But the more time I think that we can get those two guys playing together, I think is really, really imperative. That try that he scored where he kind of just pinned his ear backs and just attacked the line and found that space, got himself on the outside of the shoulder and sort of rode the contact into score. That's great. That's really, really good to see from a fullback player. Maybe, and he's a bigger body too than a player like Max Jorgensen. So he brings in a different profile, that fullback. Really excited to see him get more minutes in the future.
Yeah, had a good 40-minute stint. And it was 21-all in the second half. It was just that first half debacle that really gutted the Rebels from there. Valeni Ekawasi was a bright spark. 19 tackles, no misses, and a few tackle busts with ball in hand, but really not much chop. So we'll jump across to the Brumbies.
One just last thing on the Rebels. Oh, yes. And I think they're really, really missing Brad Wilkin. I think just the leadership that he brings and the way that he leads that team around, it's obvious that he's not there. And I think without him, they kind of go to pieces a little bit. And that's why we've seen games get out of their reach so frequently. Yes, they have the ability to come back in the second half, like the Reds, like the Hurricanes now. But the game's kind of already beyond them at that point. So I think if they had Brad Wilkin there, I think he keeps them more composed, more focused on their next task, and they don't let games slip as much.
Genuine on baller as well, which is something they are lacking at this point. So plenty of work on for the Rebels. The Brumbies are moving to Canberra. 60 defeat Moana, 21. Brumbies were up 29-14 at halftime and kicked on really well. Hudson Crichton, Tom Wright both getting doubles. But the standout of this one, Mitch, 38th minute, Tom Wright decides to cross kick from his own 5-meter line, links up with Corey Tua for a full field try. Those two are sizzling this year.
It's just, it's pace, right? You can't beat genuine speed. And that's what Corey Tua has shown so far this year. Why the Brumbies aren't kicking to him more, who knows? But that was the best option at that time. Looks so good. Let's more of it, please. More of it.
Really tidy stuff. Up front in the pack, Charlie Kale keeps impressing. 10 carries, couple of tackle busts, a line break. He's really strong at line-out time too, so he's becoming a good option. And the Brumbies building pretty nicely into this season. I think it sets up a pretty big game against the Reds that we'll touch on in just a tick. Outside of that, we saw a couple of Kiwi games. Chiefs 28 defeat the Highlanders 21, but the Chiefs were up 28-0 with 20 minutes to play, so I don't really read too much into that closer scoreline.
And Damian McKenzie went off around that time too, and you can see once he leaves the field that that team is just not as flashy without him.
No, that's the target for all sevens. Hit McKenzie, hit him late and hit him hard.
But please don't, because he's my fantasy 10 and he's just absolutely taking me to the top of the charts at the moment.
Blues, the Battle of the Heritage Kits. Blues 26. Oh,
these kits look so good. So
that was the
good.
Best thing about this game, right? It was the kits. The game itself was not much chop. It was rainy in Auckland.
Yep.
Yawn Fest, it was 9-6 at halftime before the Blues kicked on with a couple of tries. Nothing to say outside of the fact that the jerseys were so good. When do we get Heritage Round for the Aussie teams? Mitch, give us a jersey.
Oh, man. I mean, come on. Like, there is actually a Heritage Round. Like, this the confusing thing, I think, was maybe the matchups this week is that the Blues and Crusaders pulled the Heritage jerseys out early because they wanted to play it against the rivals that is the Blues Crusaders. But this technically was kids round. So there was a lot of stuff on the coverage around the kids doing interviews on the sidelines and that kind of stuff, which is great to see. There is actually a dedicated Heritage round at some point in the competition where hopefully we will see some Heritage jerseys worn by other teams. The Waratahs are kind of already wearing their Heritage kind of kit for the year this season. The Reds have announced a Heritage jersey, but it's off field and as good as it looks, it's not a play issue one.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It is very good. Anything with a collar is just good. And that's what we saw this week in that Crusaders one. So yeah, if we can see more Heritage jerseys, I love it. It's awesome.
Couldn't agree more. So there's plenty going on in that men's space. Round 5 wrapped up. I think it's time for us to take a quick peek at round 6. Mitch, take us away.
All right. So, and this first game, I already have questions. It's round 6 of the competition, and we're already going back to a game that started off the competition in round 1, Crusaders-Chiefs. Now, last time it was Chiefs hosting the Crusaders, but why is this matchup happening again so soon? That's my question.
I couldn't tell you. There are so many questions I have around the Super Rugby draw.
Yep.
Playing all your Australian or New Zealand teams going against each other more. Teams that you don't play throughout the course of the season, and then 8 teams going through of 12 competitors. I think there's going to be and needs to be a shakeup of that. That's a roundabout way of answering your question and saying, I hate the fact that they're playing each other so early again. I mean, yes, it was a great game, the Chiefs being able to beat the Crusaders, but it's just, we don't need it. It's been
fresh. It shouldn't be, this shouldn't happen before buys start kicking in. We haven't had a buy yet, so you shouldn't be doubling up. Anyway, back to the game itself. Crusaders, this is played in Christchurch. This is played at home for the Crusaders. Is that enough for them to get a win in the competition this year? How crazy does that question sound?
It's ridiculous. And I don't know what I would enjoy more. The Chiefs getting knocked down a perch after, you know, getting a bit excited they're going to be champions again, just like last year, and then they stuffed it. Or do we lean in heavily to the deliciousness of the Crusaders being 0-6 after winning 7 titles in a row? I don't know who I want to lose more. I don't think I want either of them to win. A draw would be even better.
I'm just Googling it now. So Damian McKenzie isn't listed for the Chiefs this week. Xavier Rowe is playing fly half for them.
Xavier Rowe, he's a halfback.
Hold on. Maybe I've gone Josh Jacob then. Jacob? I'm looking at the... maybe I can't go too hard knowing who I've got on the podcast, but I'm looking at the rugby.com.au team lists and it doesn't have numbers next to it. It's just names. So it gets a little bit confusing at times when you get to centers.
All right, filler, Mitch, I'm going to the Instagram.
Damian McKenzie's not playing. That, I think, is a massive, I don't know, is it a game equalizer component? I think it might be. Does that swing things enough in the Crusaders' favor this season? I don't think so. I think we're going to be sitting here next week talking about how the Crusaders have gone 6-0 or 0-6 so far this season. I think the Chiefs are going to win this pretty convincingly.
Here we go. Apparently, he might be on All Blacks rest protocol, Damian McKenzie. So that's what we're seeing in a couple of the comments popping up. We'll try and confirm. But
how good is that, though? Like, the Crusaders are now a team where you can rest your All Blacks against. I mean, we're just going to keep kicking them.
Oh, it's my favorite thing. All right, rolling on. Who's after that?
We've got Waratahs hosting the Rebels. 7:35 kickoff in Sydney. Now, this is do or die for the Waratahs season if they can't get the victory here. From this point on, I mean, they've been able to get bonus points in all of their games this year. But if the Rebels manage to get a win and deny the Waratahs a bonus point, there's very, very little chances of them catching back up to the front of the pack to make finals. Do you think the Rebels have enough to do that?
I'm not sure. I feel as though there's more riding on this for the Tars and the Rebels. I think the Tars need this desperately, and they need it to be a big win to kickstart their season. So I'd be tipping the men in sky blue. We'll see what the Rebels have to offer on the way up after, you know, 2 weeks of pretty disappointing games against the Reds and the Canes where they didn't fire enough shots.
Yep.
But yeah, expecting the Tars to do it pretty comfortably.
Taniela Tupou is back on the bench and Will Harrison's named off the bench, you would imagine, going into that fullback jersey. So as I sort of spoke about earlier in the podcast, whether he comes on and takes over the kicking duties when he's on later in the game to take that pressure off Edmed, that might, I don't know, that might allow them to kind of push ahead at that point. But, geez, I can see this game going either way, but my heart says Waratahs by a lot. So if they can win with a bonus point, I think that... that's a statement piece that Darren Coleman needs from his team at this point. They've come so close in previous weeks. They really did need to beat the Drua away last week. And the fact that they weren't able to do that in extra time puts a lot of pressure on this week. So can they deliver at home? That is what we will be talking about. The next game moving forward is the Drua hosting the Western Force. Now that's a 12:05 kickoff in Sydney on Saturday afternoon. Great time to watch rugby, particularly over a long weekend when there's, you know, two public holidays involved. We saw the Fijian and Drua went 86 minutes last week against the Waratahs in incredibly warm and humid conditions. The Western Force, though, put in a clinical performance against the Reds, got that win. The travel component is my kind of question this week. Does the travel eat into the preparation from this Force team so much so that the Drua come in clear favourites? What do you think?
I think it absolutely does. The extra 5 hours compared to everyone else getting across to Lautoka or Suva. I'm not sure where they're playing in Fiji. But
Churchill
I think
Park,
that weighs...
Wherever
Churchill
that is.
Park is Lautoka. Okay. So same spot as that Tars game. But that's such a big barrier. I know we mentioned it, you know, with our preseason chats with Cronny and he did harp on it. But especially to get to Fiji, that's a huge shift for the Perth boys. So I would expect the Drua at home, who are already 15 points better at home, we can probably agree. Yep. I would say that they do it fairly comfortably. That being said, I was impressed by the Force last week. I would love to see them get this win. I just don't expect them to.
Yeah, I think the fact that the Drua have stayed in Fiji and have had a whole week of prep at home without having to travel, the Force coming all of that way, this is the furthest trip Perth to Fiji in Super Rugby Pacific. There's not much else further. So I think that's going to be a really interesting element of this matchup. The Force have the ability to win if they can play like they did last week against the Reds, apply that pressure. they can force the Drua into making mistakes, particularly if it's a hot game. It's been pretty warm over in Perth these last few weeks, so they're kind of used to playing in the heat. But yeah, I think that travel element is going to be too far, so I'd be tipping the Drua in this one. One more point I wanted to raise before we move much further in our predictions, and that was on the Brumbies and Moana Pacifica game last week. Talking about travel, really interesting decision made by Moana. They played, who they played the week before? Was it the Rebels? They go down.
No, they played the Force. They beat the Force in Perth.
So on Saturday, they played the Force in Perth. They then decided to fly back to Auckland, home, had a week at home, and then flew down to Canberra on Saturday or Friday for the game against the Brumbies and get pumped by 40 points, concede 60 points. If we want to talk about travel being a big element in this competition, unnecessary travel like that, it just has to be brought up in terms of preparation. That's just unnecessary and another road, a hurdle in your preparation into games. Just crazy.
If I was Moana, I would have flown straight into Canberra from Perth or connected via Sydney, whatever you got to do, and set up shop there for a week. They've got great facilities around there. It's not like, you know, if you've got the AIS, you've got stacks of John Ident clubs. There's plenty of people that you'd be able to engage with. I would have loved to see them stay for the community aspect, even more so than their own performance. But, you know, that's, you know, people in higher Sansari positions than us, mate. They're making those calls.
Those frequent flyer points must be racking up so that they can get a free trip to APL later in the year. But let's move on to the next game, and that is Moana Pacifica hosting the Blues. Now, this is the Auckland double, the Auckland, not doubleheader, but the Auckland close, both teams being played in Auckland, one at Mount Smart Stadium, the other at Eden Park. Does that eat into anything? Moana Pacifica coming off a big loss from the Brumbies last week. The Blues played at home. Can Moana trouble the Blues this week?
Well, it's a Moana home game, but it's at Eden Park. So go figure. Like, the scheduling of Moana this year is so strange. They're playing up in Northland. They're playing in that game in Hamilton. They've got games all across the shop this year.
I recall reading a few weeks ago that there's something wrong with Mount Smart Stadium, whether the pitch isn't up to scratch or something. They just can't play professional games on it for whatever reason.
Whatever it is, it's really wreaking havoc with the Moana schedule. So I do feel for them. We've got a home game against the Blues, so they'll pack it out. I expect the Blues to win this fairly comfortably, given they've been in a decent vein of form. But also, you got to remember last year, I think it took a last-minute try or a last-minute score for the Blues to put Moana away in this very venue. So I would like to see Moana get up. I'm expecting a pretty high-scoring game, but Blues to do the job.
Yeah, I can't see. I'd be surprised if Moana got up this week. I think just the travel element alone is enough to eat into that preparation. But the Blues, Blues are trying to get back at the top of the table. They currently sit in, where's my table gone? They kind of sit in fourth place with the Brumbies, Chiefs and Hurricanes ahead of them. So they know what they need to do to get back up the top. And they want to be doing everything they possibly can to get a home quarterfinal, so, or a home semi. So they will not be taking this game lightly. And I can see them absolutely pantsing Moana, if I'm perfectly honest with you. Next game is Highlanders against the Hurricanes. Now, we saw the Highlanders did come close-ish to the Chiefs last week. Hurricanes have not lost a game so far this season. Are the Highlanders capable of stopping the momentum of the Hurricanes and getting an upset victory?
I remember campaigning very strongly last year that New Zealand didn't have the depth of resources for five teams, and therefore you get rid of the Highlanders. I now want them to beat the Hurricanes desperately. Desperately. No one likes a tall poppy over this side of the ditch, and I think That's the right. Hurricanes are now too big for their own boots. So let's get behind the Highlanders to knock them off. And I think they could. The Highlanders, you know, they took an hour to wake up against the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are, you know, bloody brilliant at the moment. Canes again have rolled out a stacked lineup, and on paper, on form, they should win this comfortably. But every team slips up through the season. I feel like this could be the Canes banana skin game. They're down at Dunedin, you got a full zoo. Maybe something rolls their way, and I think the Highlanders get this one in a tight one.
I'm also going to tip the Highlanders in this one. I think they've showed form these last few weeks. Maybe not enough to actually win games, but they've definitely been in them And Reece Patchell and Falau Fakatava have been really, really impressive. And they're both starting for the Highlanders this week. So let's see if they can get it done in the Zoo. Highlanders, I'll say by like 1 or 2 points, it'd be tight though. Now, this is the game we're all excited for. This is the Aussie derby of the year, the Reds and the Brumbies. Who is the top of the Australian Conference? I think if I was Joe Schmidt, I'd basically just have a blank 1 to 15 written down. And whoever wins this game, you just write their names in. 1 to 15 and maybe leave out the internationals like Tumung Allen. But can the Reds do it at home against the Brumbies?
It's going to be massive. This game is going to be massive. It's not just because I'm a nuts Reds fan. It's because last time the Brumbies came up here last year, they put 50 on the Reds at Suncorp. They haven't forgotten. They haven't forgotten, and they are pissed off. So Reds coming off a pretty stalling loss against the Force in Perth. Brumbies coming off the high of skewering Moana. It's hard to get a read on either of those performances. So this is now the litmus test. Who becomes the top Australian premiership hope at this point of the season? Obviously, there's time for the likes of the Force, the Rebels, the Tars to show what they're made of. But really, this is the heavyweights of the Australian side going at it. So
is Lockie, before you give your verdict, is this the Super Rugby final for 2024?
The Super Rugby, Super Rugby Pacific final for 24. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I want it to be. I feel like it could be a semi. I've got a weird feeling that this could actually be a semi-final. And the team that kicks on from here kicks big and takes a spot in the top two. But I don't know which one it is. I really don't know. I want to say the Reds. I'm going to tip with my heart because I've got no idea how else to go by. But the lineups themselves are so cool. You've got Pattaya's marking Corey Toole. You've got Jock Campbell going against Tom Wright, two spurned Wallaby fullbacks from last year. You've got James Slipper and Lachie Lonergan on loose head and hooker going up against Tumunga Allen. Like, there are so many good matchups. So let's go Reds by 5, and that's only because I'm horribly biased. What's your take?
I have said it for a few weeks that I haven't been completely convinced with the Brumbies this year. I have been impressed with the Reds, though. Takeaway last week, and we've spoken about the travel enough. The Force showed up, the Reds didn't. The Reds will show up this week. And if there's one thing we have learned from the Reds this season, Les Kiss can get them up for a game. We saw what he did in that little stand sort of preview into the locker room coverage that they had against the Waratahs in round one, how he was absolutely drilling it into the team. He will be doing that this week against the Brumbies. He knows to be the best team in Australia, you need to beat the Brumbies. So I'm convinced that the Reds will be up for this one. Whether the Brumbies have enough to kind of stop that power, particularly out wide, I think there's question marks over that. I think that Tom Wright, as good as he's been in the last few weeks, he still makes one or two bad decisions a game. He's guilty of giving away those options. And I think the Reds are good enough to capitalize on that. So I'm going to say the Reds by 10. That's my
call. What if the Brumbies get up here? So people have been bagging them for most of the year, even though they're 4-1.
They won't.
If the Brumbies get up and win here, they'll show themselves as a genuine force, like a genuine title shot.
Yeah, maybe. But we're only round 6, right?
These are all good points. We've got plenty of footy to play. And regardless of where you are, we mentioned before, but get to the double headers in Australia. Get to Allianz. Get to Suncorp. There's going to be 4 amazing games to go across. And I can't wait. I absolutely cannot wait for this round.
It's going to be really, really exciting. Easter Rugby, 4 days off. Make sure you just get and tune into every single game. They're going to be absolutely crackers. We'll be back at some point over the weekend. We're not sure yet in terms of schedules when we can align, but we'll hope to get something out to you over the weekend so that you've got something to dissect about this weekend's games of rugby. I think that kind of brings us to the end of the podcast for this week. Thanks for sticking with us. We apologize again that we haven't been as frequent as we have in the past few weeks, but we will endeavor to get back to that at some point in the future. Very much looking forward to watching the Waratahs smash the Rebels and the Reds absolutely thumping and pantsing the Brumbies this weekend. It's going to be good. Go both our teams and just go rugby.
Go rugby. And thank you to the people that reached out and asked if we were okay. That's really sweet. We're fine. we're sorting out and juggling the difficulties of a podcast with full-time regular lives and jobs and things. So we appreciate the support and we look forward to having a structure for you coming up.
Fantastic. Thanks, team. We will be back next week. Enjoy your Easter long weekend and enjoy the rugby. Bye.
Bye.